Minecraft is dropping PlayStation VR support in an upcoming patch, which is sad, but not a surprise. Plus, IBM successfully sued Zynga over violating a 1989 patent for the Prodigy online service. Tonight is September 22nd, 2024, in the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is everyone, Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O'Kay says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Okay, I have no clue if my hair is messed up right now because I can't see it right now until I hit this button. It's okay. I thought, like, my headphones had messed up my hair, my wonderful hair. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a Not Hair Messed Up edition. It's a good hair day. Good hair day edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history or computer history, which we may do a little bit tonight. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on this Sunday evening, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. We are live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the chat directly. And I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. But I do understand this is a podcast. If you can't be here on Sunday nights, I understand. You can join us in our Discord server, though. VogNetwork.com/Discord will get you the invite into it, and you can talk back at me, which several people did over the past week, and talk back about previous episodes and continue the conversation, and also bring up things that I may not have actually seen and that you want to hear on the show. One of the topics tonight did come from our Discord server, but I will say that I did wind up getting, even though spooky season is coming, and there's spooky season, and then here in the U.S. there is turkey season, and then we get to the holiday season, and I know elsewhere in the world there are different holidays between now and then. I will say that I have already gotten the way that Hallmark gets my money every single year. And I got this year's video game ornament. They started doing these about 4 or 5 years ago. And this year, y'all, is the Xbox. We're talking the original Xbox. I'm holding it upside down. The original Xbox as an ornament. And it does, once you spend the, 30 minutes getting into the batteries that they ship them with, because there's no easy way to open the batteries. It takes three CR2032 batteries. They give them to you in the box, but really it's actually easier just to get your own, an easier box. But it does light up a tiny bit if you press a button on the front, and then you can hear the thing. But it's the power button, the little X, the green X on it lights up. Nothing else lights up, but you get the sound, and then you get this game, which my wife... lover, she didn't know what this was from. This is the first time it's not video game music that they're doing, because every other ornament we have has the like 8-bit sounds or something, and even the Dreamcast one had something that sounded more like a video game, and this one has Halo on it. So it goes through the first two bars, then the light at the front turns off, and that's all it does. Like every time you hit it, it does the same thing. So it's not like you also get, Blinks the Time Sweeper or Fusion Frenzy or any of the other games that you remember from the Xbox. No, it's literally just Halo. I will also say it is the Duke controller that they have. So they do have the Duke controller on top. That's what it's got. So you can actually find these. I think it's like $16.99 or something on Hallmark. Every year they seem to announce release a new ornament. They are dipping more into the video game ornaments because they realize that people who love video games have a lot of cash that they're willing to spend on that stuff. And one of the ones that's actually really neat is they've got a Sonic the Hedgehog one that is actually like the loop of the rings, and when you hit the button, it actually like Sonic actually loops through the rings, and like he does the loop de loop and collects like the five rings, and it has the sound and the lights and everything. So that was kind of cool, but not cool enough for us to buy. In non-gaming news, the one they actually have of Grogu that animates, it actually does a fantastic job of animating Grogu. So we're like, yeah, we're getting that one. Hallmark has already started putting out all their geek-centric ornaments because they know that we have all the money now and they want our money. So we've already done our shopping. So now we can enjoy the spooky season, which they now have spooky tree ornaments. So you can have your tree that you normally put up in December. You can go ahead and put it up in October, and they'll sell you ornaments that are appropriate for October if you want. And they light up and animate and everything. So, yeah. So if you're still focusing on Halloween, that Hallmark has you covered. They want your money, too. Or just find a spirit Halloween at any abandoned storefront. The Breakman says, okay, I guess if you want a non-scary, lame Halloween. I will say that the Hallmark, the current marketing push for Hallmark and spooky season is with Disney's Haunted Mansion. So that's the kind of spooky, or I guess spoopy, that Hallmark is going with. It's all Haunted Mansion stuff based on the Haunted Mansion ride. They even have one that's got the little hologram of the woman that's in the crystal ball in the ride. And that's what they're doing. And there is Nightmare Before Christmas stuff. But really, this year, they're really pushing Haunted Mansion. So if you're really into Disney's Haunted Mansion, Hallmark wants your money. So I do want to mention that we did get some comments in the Discord. And I wanted to go ahead and say this one just because, yes, like I got. From 13X Forever. So a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about, you know, I was listening, you know, watched the Nintendo Direct, and I didn't realize, because they didn't say that it was a digital eclipse to Tetris Forever. So Tetris Forever is going to have all these Tetrises, but it's actually part of their Gold Master series, and they didn't really say that. And I was like, yeah, and I was very pleased to hear after the Nintendo Direct that it was part of Digital Eclipse, because they didn't really say it. And he's like, excuse me, they totally did show Digital Eclipse's logo at the end of the trailer in the Nintendo Direct, so you probably should have seen it. He was actually much nicer than that, but I was like, okay, my eyes are bad. And also, I probably wasn't looking at the screen in this split second. So it was mentioned in the Nintendo Direct that Tetris Forever was being done by Digital Eclipse, thanks to a logo in the top left corner on a screen that was there for 2 or 3 seconds, and I probably wasn't looking at it. All right, so thank you so much for that. And also, thank you to everybody for not raking me over the coals over the fact that I mispronounced the creators of Flappy Bird's name multiple times. In fact, I just said the completely wrong name. The creator's name is Dong Nguyen, and it is not Doug. I realized this while I was editing. I was like, wait a minute, that's not the right name. And I guess in my head what happened is the N got turned upside down when I was reading it, and I read Doug. And then I said that name like 30 more times over the course of the story last week about Flappy Bird not actually coming back. His name is actually Dong Nguyen. I actually even recorded a bit into the podcast, like in the middle of that story. I'm like, look, I messed this up. I am not trying to edit all of the times that I said the word Doug. So I apologize. It's Dong Nguyen, so I apologize. Dong Nguyen doesn't listen to this podcast, so but I do try to get people's names right. And if somebody says how to say their name, I try to respect them. And if somebody creates a file format and tells me how to say that name, I also respect it when nobody else does. So that's enough on that. Also, I wanted to, before I get into the news, there is a little bit of an appearance that I'm going to be making, or a voice appearance, basically. As y'all know, I kind of started getting into the speedrunning community for a little bit for the past couple of years. And I finally, for the first time, got invited to help commentate on a speedrun. So that is going to be happening this Friday, actually. So I am not doing a speed run. I am not a speedrunner. I'm going to be one of the commentators of a race this week. So on Friday, September 27th at 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Pacific, I am going to be commentating on a speedrun race. at a speedrunning marathon called Multithon Rivals. And this is going to be benefiting a charity called Blue Path. And Blue Path has, they train dogs. It's a dog training service. Autism service dogs, very specifically. So Blue Path provides autism service dogs, offering safety, companionship, and opportunities for independence. So this is it's a remote run. I'm not traveling anywhere for it. I'm going to be doing it from this exact same chair on this exact same mic. So the game I'm going to be commentating for, because Breakman asked, do I know the game? So I am specifically commentating on a game called Doronko Wonko. Doronko Wanko. And this is an all gifts race between Cubs Rule 21 and Sel Kuthmind. They've got a 15-minute estimate on it. So Doronko Wanko, I had never heard of. It is apparently free on Steam, but it is so if you take Power Wash Simulator and you reverse it. So it is the prequel to Power Wash Simulator. And the game is you are a Pomeranian who has been left. Your master owner, your mom, she just moved in to a new house and is very, very tired and goes to sleep and leaves you alone, you, the Pomeranian, alone, and there's mud outside. And so you do what a dog does when you want attention, and you basically get mud and paint on everything. And the goal of the race is to do enough damage by splatting mud and paint and everything everywhere and knocking things over that you get all the gifts. And I think you have to do like $20 million worth of damage. It is it's a free game. It was made by Bandai Namco. It is free on Steam. It was like an April Fool's Day joke or something. So it's cat lateral damage, but with dog and mud. So this is they're going to be racing on who can get all 12 gifts first, and that speed run is generally around 7 minutes. So I'm going to be there for about 15 minutes, maybe max. But I'm going to be commentating on it, and I have no clue how that's going to work on that, because they are very good at commentating their own stuff. I watched them do the another category of this at a different marathon. But they asked me to be on the commentary, so it's my first time doing couch commentary for a speedrunning event. This will be my first time. So the Breakman asked, can you do doggy poot? No, it is specifically you are doing paint and mud. You none of the mess comes from inside your body. You put your body on the mess and then make the mess go everywhere else. So I'm going to be doing that Friday, September 27th at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. That is on Multithon. So it's over at twitch.tv/Multithon, MULTITHON. And all donations go to benefit Blue Path to provide autism service dogs. So enjoy. I'm going to enjoy that a lot. And I am not going to go play it first because I want to see how they do it, even though I've actually already watched this category, but I haven't watched them do this category. So not much tech to explain. It's probably going to be more just, you know, we're going to make dog jokes. I'm going to be a cheerleader. You know, I'm going to be more like a Pomeranian during that. So the news this week is the first one got submitted on our Discord server, and it's about Minecraft. And so it's kind of fitting, I guess, or sad that Loki's not here tonight. He is finishing up TwitchCon, which hopefully everybody who went to TwitchCon had a great time and got to hang out with all their favorite creators or favorite moderators or favorite people in their community. But Video Games Chronicle reports that Mojang has announced plans to drop PlayStation VR support for Minecraft in early 2025. PlayStation VR support was added to the PS4 version of the game via a free update in September of 2020. And they said, quote, our ability to support PlayStation VR has come to an end and will no longer be supported in updates after March of 2025. After you receive the final update, you will still receive updates on your PlayStation and be able to play without PlayStation VR. From this point on, you can keep building in your worlds, and your marketplace purchases, including tokens, will continue to be available. You will no longer be able to use your PlayStation VR with Minecraft, as it will no longer be supported in the latest updates, unquote. So they are currently developing a native version of Minecraft for the PS5, but no announcements on when that's coming, and no plans on if it's going to support PlayStation VR 2. And ZenMonkey11 says, I didn't even know Minecraft was on PSVR. You know, honestly, I didn't either. I knew they had added VR support to some of their stuff, especially on PC, but I kind of forgot, because, you know, September 2020 wasn't a great time for us, I didn't realize that they had added it there. But it makes sense to me why they're going to be dropping it, because unfortunately, when you do VR work, every time you do an update, you have to spend resources to test to make sure that that update works on all ways of playing it. And so, unfortunately, the PlayStation VR player base is dwindling. The Meta Quest has overtaken PlayStation VR as the most popular VR headset. And they can see how many people are using PSVR to play Minecraft. And at a certain point, it gets to be so few people that it is actually not worth the resources to do the QA to make sure that what they're building in these new feature updates also work in VR, especially if they're doing graphical updates, visual updates. So, you know, you have to test to see if it works on a flat monitor, and you have to test to make sure those same graphical updates work in VR. And at some point, there are diminishing returns. There are not enough people actually using PlayStation VR to make that worth it. So I get it. The Breakman says, only kids under 12 care about this news. And Loki. You got to realize, and I don't talk about this all that much on this show, but Loki from Orange Lounge Radio is actually a Minecraft YouTuber. He's just one viral hit away from making it big, but he is at TwitchCon meeting up with other Minecraft creators. And he does some amazing work in Minecraft, and he is his kids are 12, but he is not 12. And Breakman says, sorry, and their parents. Okay, well, there you go. So that's most of the world, because, you know, I don't have kids, but a lot of people do. So they care. But I totally get it, especially with the player base dwindling, and there probably isn't enough people on PlayStation VR 2 for them to even put it on PlayStation VR 2, because once again, they want to make all these updates. And it's a continually updating game. It's not like Minecraft is done. It's not like they're never going to update again, even though I'm sure some people would be like, please stop updating it because you're breaking all the stuff I liked about it, like PlayStation VR. But they actually say that they're going to be doing this more often. They actually say, quote, we know you want new Minecraft content more often, which is why we're changing our feature development rhythm. Instead of providing one free update during the summer, as we've done in the past, we will now be releasing a number of free game drops throughout the year. These game drops will vary in size and will bring you features to explore more frequently, unquote. And so, since they want to do multiple in a year, they don't want to have to test the VR that a small percentage of people are using for each feature. I get it. It sucks for the people that knew that it was on PlayStation VR. I've played Minecraft in VR. I enjoy walking around the worlds in VR. Especially if it's something that I've built on a monitor, it's kind of neat to walk around it in VR and look around my creations. And it would probably be neat to like look through like Loki's creations and the stuff that he's built go on his server with VR, which I believe I can still do on PC VR. I believe that still works, and I believe there's a Quest version as well. ZenMonkey11 is probably going to pipe in and tell me exactly where Minecraft is available on VR. Yeah, the PSVR, even though it was at the time a really great headset, it still is a great headset for what it is. The player base has moved on. And I can't blame them for only concentrating on platforms where people play it. Now, Redertainment asks, is there a resource that can say which platform is the least or most used to play Minecraft? Yes. Now, your follow-up questions can be like, well, where is it? And I'll be like, at Microsoft. They absolutely can tell exactly how many people are playing on what system, because Minecraft requires an online service to use, at least the Minecraft that they care about. Java Edition, not so much. But the Minecraft, the main version that everybody new uses, absolutely calls home. They know exactly how many people are playing on what platform. They have all of that information. They can even tell what resolution they're playing at, what their computer specs are, all things like that. So Microsoft absolutely has that. Are they going to release it to the public? No. But is there a resource? Yes. They're looking at it, and that's probably how they know that nobody, that such a small amount of people are using PlayStation VR to play Minecraft that it's not worth the effort to test for it. S. Sherman asks, is Minecraft in VR really intuitive over the years? A little bit I played of it a while ago. It was kind of a neat feature, but not really all that functional. So I actually don't know. I have never played my, I don't think I've ever actually played the official Minecraft VR implementation. What I played was the mod called Minecraft, and this is like 10 years ago now at this point, and that's weird to say that VR, the Oculus Rift Dev Kit 1 was like 11 years ago. It was 2013. But there, somebody made a mod for Minecraft in like 2014, 2015 called Minecraft, because get it, Oculus Rift. And it allowed you to play it in there, but they had to mod it, so it wasn't a native implementation. They did make, Microsoft and Mojang did finally make a native implementation, which Zenmonkey 11 says, yes, it still works in PC VR. You can even use your Quest 2 and 3 headset to play it. So yeah. So is it intuitive? I don't know. I didn't care much about building in VR. I'm sure if I kept at it, I probably could get okay at it. But I'm so used to playing Minecraft with a controller, not really even a mouse and keyboard. I'm used to the controller because I always played it on console. But I'm so used to that, that using the motion controls and having the first person, I would probably prefer to build in, you know, the normal game mode that everybody plays and then go and like look around and like kind of see what I've built in VR. So OG Happy Dude asks, is there anything that makes the PS VR good enough for a purchase? The only thing I would suffer through due to motion sickness would be Resident Evil 4 VR, but that's a Meta exclusive. How you doing, Happy Dude? So PS VR is actually it's a really good headset. If the game is designed well, you won't get that much motion sickness. Now, most games probably aren't designed well, because what motion sickness is essentially your brain saying, hey, what your eyes are showing me is different than what your ears, the fluid in your ears is telling me. You're obviously poisoned, so I am going to expel the poison from your body. That's motion sickness. That's literally what's going on in your head. It's the same thing as car sickness, seasickness, all that stuff. And it's because your eyes are saying, oh, I'm still, but your ears are like, no, you're moving. Or in the case of VR, your eyes are saying, I am moving around. I am being moved around and everything. And your ears are like, no, you're sitting still. Something's wrong. So if the game is designed well, if it's got a high enough refresh rate, which the PlayStation VR does with the PlayStation 4, if the game is designed well, it doesn't move you. You are in control of your movements. And there are a lot of ways, you know, locomotion abilities that a lot of games have started using that make it so when you do move in the world, it doesn't affect your brain to make you think that you're poisoned. So a lot of games on the PlayStation VR have ways that to limit the motion sickness. Now, is it going to eliminate it? No. Everybody's different. There are people that even if they're just sitting still in VR and not actually moving, they still get motion sickness. And there's nothing wrong with that. Just everybody's body physiology is different. There are some good things on PlayStation VR for PS4. In fact, the first Astro Bot game was Astrobot Rescue Mission. It was a PSVR exclusive, and it was a really interesting way of doing a platformer where basically you are the camera. So that's a game where you are not the player. You're not in a first-person perspective of the player. You are the camera. You are looking down, and you're looking around to try to find the hidden Astrobots. And that was our first introduction to the Astrobot character, was actually on PlayStation VR. The Moss games are the same way. Tetris Effect on PlayStation VR is phenomenal. And they've even got Rez, the VR version, which that one moves you around a little bit more, so that's probably a little more intense. But there are some good things on there. However, there's nothing else new for it. But if you can get one cheap, yeah, there's some good stuff. If you can get a PlayStation VR pretty cheap, there's some good stuff on there. The hardware leaves a little bit to be desired, especially using the Move controllers, because that's outdated tech. But there is some good stuff on there. PlayStation VR 2, not as much has been released for the PlayStation VR 2 for the PS5. I know that's not what you were asking, but some games have gotten an upgrade to PSVR 2, such as the aforementioned Tetris Effect, Rez, Moss, and Moss 2. Not Astrobot, though. That one's not on PSVR 2. But there are some good things on there, but there's not enough software for the PlayStation VR 2 to make that worth it. But PlayStation VR 1 actually does have some really good stuff, and so people might be trying to offload their PlayStation VR 1 that works with a PS4, and I have a base PS4. It works fine on that. You don't have to have a PS4 Pro to make good use of it. But I would say, you know, if you can get one cheap, there are games that are good that won't make you motion sickness, because the PSVR does have a very high refresh rate, so your brain does not get too worried about if you're being poisoned and if it needs to expel the poison. It could still happen. I am not a doctor. I try not to even play one on TV, but that's just what I know. Pod Culture says PlayStation VR 2 can do PC now, though. So, yes, like if you have a beefy PC and you get you're able to get that cable, it's sold out, I believe. I haven't been able to get one yet. To connect the PSVR 2 to your PC, then you can do all the PC games. But a lot of the strength of like the PlayStation VR 1 and the PlayStation VR 2 is working with the PS4 or the PS5 hardware. And that's where some of the magic comes in. Because not all of the features of the PSVR 2 are accessible on PC yet, like any of the haptic feedback in the head and the eye tracking and stuff that they can only do on the PS5. That hasn't come to PC yet. That's just because the open source people haven't reverse engineered it to make it work. They'll get there, though. They'll get there. So let's talk about patents. I hate patents. Because I don't have any. That's why I hate patents. As a software developer, I don't work in games, but worrying about patent trolls is actually legitimate, because you can get a patent for just about anything, and it'll get granted until somebody challenges it, and that costs money. And so I've talked in the past about patents that that have annoyed me, and annoyed people. Like the act of sending a document over the internet actually got patented, and somebody actually sued, because what the people did was they printed it out, signed it, scanned it, and emailed it to someone, and that violated their patent, because they had a system where you would take a document and sign it and send it over the internet. And the fact that they were using a scanner to do this violated their patent, and they actually argued this in court. So IBM has tens of thousands of patents. And instead of, because IBM is a very large old company, the larger you are, the slower you move. So they have all these patents for these innovations that maybe they don't use anymore or don't have the time to use. But if anybody else uses them, then they get their money. The Register reports that IBM's patent farm has yielded another bumper crop, with a Delaware jury awarding Big Blue $45 million in damage from mobile games maker Zynga. Remember Zynga from a long time ago? Jurors decided that the Farmville maker Zynga and its subsidiary ChartBoost had infringed on two IBM patents, including one from all the way back in the Prodigy days of 1989. In its complaint, IBM described the patents as core to the online networking and advertising structure of the modern internet and argued that while other big tech companies have licensed the patents to suit, Zynga has spent almost 8 years delaying discussions. IBM has said, quote, though Zynga is nominally a gaming company, its success relies on sophisticated data capture, processing, and analytics technology, which rely on prior innovations in big data, analytics, and online advertising made by IBM and others, unquote. IBM said this in its 2022 complaint. IBM said, quote, IBM is pleased with the jury verdict that recognizes Zynga's infringement of IBM's patents, unquote. So the patents mentioned is there's one that's the 849 patent, which is an original filing by Prodigy in 1989 that possesses, quote, a method for presenting advertising in an interactive service provided on a computer network, unquote, followed chronologically by the 719 patent that proposed a dual model view controller approach that splits architecture between a client and a server to reduce latency. The 719 patent was filed in 2000. This is literally just the modern internet. So in the 346 patent filed in 2005 defines a quote, a user runtime, a runtime user account creation operation within a single sign-on process in a federated computing environment, unquote, which is literally the modern internet. While the 904 patent from 2006 involves redefining online promotions to manage them from the bottom up instead of a traditional top-down approach. Once again, modern marketing on the modern internet. So Zynga only infringed on the first two patents I talked about, with the $44.9 million verdict split two ways, $40 million awarded for the Prodigy violation, and the rest for the violations of 719 that has a model view controller approach, which, by the way, if you're not a software developer, that's how most websites are designed, are with a model view controller approach, where you have model is your data model. The view is how the user sees that data. And the controller is how that user interacts with the data. It's literally the modern internet and it's modern web architecture. TigerClaw does say, yeah, patents are heavily abused. A company makes a patent but doesn't do anything with it and waits for somebody else to make whatever is in the patent and sues them to get money with it. To be fair, the Prodigy service did exist and they did actually use what was in that 849 patent. So it's not like it's, so they're a patent troll, but they're not as an egregious patent troll. It's not like they patented something, never built anything, and then actually went after the person who actually built the thing that they had patented. Questor said, from what I read elsewhere, IBM has over 120,000 patents and led to the number of patents filed for nearly 30 years until a few years ago, because they were filing 1,000 patents per year. They actually, so I was actually getting to that as well as I read down into the argument here. Zynga says, quote, we are disappointed by the verdict. However, we believe we will prevail on appeal, unquote, according to the parent company, Take-Two Games. I, for some reason, thought Zynga was with EA, but I guess they're not anymore, or they never were, and that's just Mandela effect there. Dredging up ancient patents to wage war is not a new tactic at IBM. The company even notes in its original lawsuit against Zynga that it has more than 80,000 patents around the world that it is happy to wield as a bludgeon to, quote, protect its innovations, unquote, and to benefit humanity, because they say, quote, like the research upon which patents are based, IBM's patents also benefit society. IBM's commitment, actually, this deserves the evil voice.
IBM's commitment to creating a large patent portfolio underscores the value that IBM places in the exchange of innovation and disclosure of that innovation in return for limited exclusivity.
So, yes, they're like, oh, yes, we're helping innovation by forcing you to pay us when you're using something that you think is innovative. OG Happy Dude says, I'm thinking of PopCap is the one that EA bought, not Zynga. That's what it was. PopCap, the bejeweled people. That's the one. I can't remember anymore. All this consolidation. IBM actually has used the Prodigy patent against other companies before. IBM sued Priceline for violating its patents in 2015, including the 849, which is the Prodigy patent, and the 346 patent, which is, which one is that? That is the run. That's the single sign-on runtime user account. Like, I actually think VogueNetwork.com violates these patents, to be perfectly honest. Settling the matter in 2017 for an undisclosed amount. Similar undisclosed settlements have been reached over the years in cases against Airbnb and Rakuten. Groupon agreed to pay IBM $57 million for infringing on some of its same patents, and a case against Expedia appears to have been dropped by both parties. IBM said in his complaint against Zynga, quote, the modern technology industry has recognized IBM's pioneering innovations in areas including big data analytics, digital marketplaces, and web-based businesses. As a result, dozens of modern technology companies, including Amazon, Apple, Google, and Facebook, have agreed to cross-license with IBM's defendants. Zynga have not, unquote. Essentially, because all the other companies were like, fine, IBM, here's some pocket change, here you go. They're able to go after other people. And IBM, thankfully, is really only going after the big players because it's not worth it to get, you know, the $50 they would be able to get from Vogue Network, because I'm pretty sure there's probably an IBM patent that I violated building VogueNetwork.com, especially that model view controller architecture one, because that's what I used. But I did want to take this time a little bit to talk about the Prodigy service. And somebody had noticed, because every once in a while I'll put things on the side over here to my desk for the Twitch viewers, that's part of this. And I actually, it was very surprised to hear Prodigy, that service, come up in a discussion where I could talk about Prodigy. Because I was, thankfully, we were founding members of Prodigy. So in 1988, which it actually says in actual words on here. In fact, these are what I actually have are the original 5 1/4 inch floppies of the Prodigy service from when we were in 1988. I was on it as a kid. So Prodigy is later a techno band that sang Firestarter. But in 1988, Prodigy was a service that was like the internet, but not the internet. So ARPANET existed, but this was more of a closed system. Prodigy was, I think, IBM's real answer to AOL when AOL was early on. This was also around the same time QLink was around, which was the Commodore 64 version of AOL. Same company, actually. Quantum Link actually predated AOL, and then they ported Quantum Link to PC, called it America Online, killed QLink, and called themselves America Online. Fifth Dream says, I didn't join it until late 96, but I stayed on until the night it died. So Prodigy in 1988 and Prodigy in 1996 were two completely different things. So one of the things about Prodigy was that just like ham radio, everybody had their own kind of call sign type of thing, which was a sequence of numbers and letters, or actually really 4 letters, 2 numbers, and then you could have 6 accounts on that. So in order to mail someone, use electronic mail, you would have to know their code. And mine, I actually remember, was CBVB72C. Which CBVB72 was my family's code, A was my dad, B was my mom, C was me. And I also had D, E, and F, because you could have up to 6. I used those for various role-playing games. In fact, Prodigy is where my name came from, because I was in a role-playing group on one of the Prodigy boards, message boards, and I wanted to name my D&D. It wasn't really D&D, it was some like D&D. But it wasn't the D&D system. And I wanted to call myself Red Wolf. And somebody else was already called like Red Talons or something. So I didn't want to steal the same color. So I changed it to Black Wolf. And then when I was on IRC after Prodigy, I called myself Black Wolf. And that's where the name came from. So, but Prodigy was a graphical interface. And it was, I'm trying to figure out which one of these, because I also don't want to dox myself, because like, I could show this. And those are, that's my parents, by the way, right there in that picture. They want a cruise from Prodigy. So we actually have like a lot of stuff about like the cruise, and I was in the news about Prodigy, and we don't want to talk about all that, because I also don't want to show it because it's got my real name, because Black Wolf's not my real name. Bobby is. Black Wolf isn't. But I believe in this one, yeah, I've actually got, like, because my dad was a, he would do talks and stuff, so we actually had slides, and so he actually built, made slides that were screenshots from Prodigy. So it was essentially, it was very low res. If you had a CGA computer, it was in black and white. If you had EGA, it was in color. You got 16 colors if it was in EGA. But you could get a weather map. Like, they had graphical weather maps that it would send over a dial-up modem. You would call a local number. I'm trying to see if any of these slides had an ad, because they had banner ads. Like, that's what, that's probably what the patent is about, is like early banner ads, which they, here's some sports scores. You can get sports scores. That's probably what the patent's about, is like getting the banner ads from these. And I don't think any banner ads made it into any of these slides that he has. But that's what Prodigy was. It was the internet. Before the internet, and it was a closed system. And oh, he printed them out on regular paper. I didn't need to put up the slides. But anyway, that's what Prodigy was. And so IBM did actually use these patents. These aren't like other patents where, you know, oh, they made it and then they waited for, they signed up for the patent, waited for somebody else to actually implement it, and then sue them for all their money. I have a lot of fond memories about Prodigy. Eagle-eyed viewers can even see that there's a Prodigy baseball cap in my background. And Questbuster says, adding to Bobby's comment on ARPANET, services like Prodigy brought that arcane tech to the every person with a simple GUI and login process. Now, to be clear, Prodigy was not on ARPANET. So in 1988, it was a closed system. You were only interacting with other people on Prodigy, but they were using national dial-in numbers, so you had a local number that you would dial in. It wouldn't be long distance, and they would all talk to each other. So it was a network of computers, and it wasn't available in every city unless you wanted to call long distance. Luckily, Atlanta had the 404 area code, which was actually the largest area code in the country at the time. So it was pretty easy to get a local number to call in. And then they charged, I think, per hour or something like that. Like, there was a charge if you used it too much. But it was, they had message boards. They didn't really have live chat. That I don't remember them really having, was instantaneous chat. But they did have games. They had some games that would, you know, draw things on the screen. Mad Maze is one of them that I remember. So it was really, really an interesting time to be online. And so that was my online experience. And then I finally got like an email address, an actual internet email address in like 92, 93, and then actually got on IRC for the first time in 1994. And that's how old I am. Now, Fifth Dream says they did at some point. I was in the goth industrial room forever. So once the internet came, once the internet got into more consumers' hands, we're talking like the mid-90s, Prodigy shifted to become an internet provider. And so they were a front end for the internet. And so then they were able to have more real-time stuff, and you would actually be able to connect to the internet, and you would actually be able to email people through Prodigy using, and people that had regular email addresses, and it did connect to the wider internet. That's Prodigy, and I really wanted to just talk about Prodigy for a little bit in a video game podcast, because it's normally not relevant, but somehow IBM made it relevant, because Prodigy is why we can't have nice things, apparently. S. Jerry Matt says, AOL invented the internet, just like Apple invented cell phones. Yes, that's what we'll go with. I actually think Q-Link was a superior service to AOL on my Commodore 64. I miss Q-Link a lot. The last patent thing, and we actually don't know the patents on this one. We're probably going to learn them soon. The lawsuit we thought has been coming for 9 months has finally come, and we don't actually know why. It's one of those, like, we know why in our head, but we don't actually know why. So The Verge reports that Pocket Pair has responded to the lawsuit filed against it by Nintendo and the Pokemon Company. The studio that developed Pal World, the game at the heart of the suit, issued a statement saying that it doesn't know what patents it violated. So Nintendo and the Pokemon Company sued Pocket Pair, which developed Pal World, saying they violated patents. And Pocket Pair's like, we don't know what patents we violated. I don't know. Says, quote, at this moment, we are unaware of the specific patents we were accused of infringing upon, and we have not been notified of such details, unquote. According to Nintendo's press release, the reason for the lawsuit has to do with Pocket Pair allegedly infringing on multiple, as of yet, undisclosed patents. They are still undisclosed. There are people speculating. There are people like, oh, it's obviously this patent or this patent. We don't actually know. We don't. And Mike Def says, we don't know, sure. And it's kind of interesting. Pocket Pair might not actually know because they might not have actually been served this lawsuit. Nintendo only put out a press release saying it was intending to sue. But Pocket Pair probably hasn't been served notice yet. So they probably don't actually know because they haven't been able to read the lawsuit yet. Nintendo's told the media we're suing, but I don't know if that has actually been delivered. The details of the lawsuit have not yet been made public because it probably hasn't been served yet. So we don't know which patents, and they don't know either. The news broke that they were suing the makers of Power World, which is an open-world survival crafting game that features a collection of companion monsters players can catch in battle. Since its release in January, the game became an instant hit, racking up over 10 million in copies sold and breaking Steam concurrent player records within its first few weeks. Almost immediately, people noticed striking similarities between Pal World's pals and Pokemon, from their looks down to their extraordinarily similar character models. Though Nintendo's not going after Pocket Pair because Lamballs look uncomfortably similar to Wooloo's, we do know that the company is famously litigating and protecting its brand. Shortly after Pal World's release, TPC ordered a programmer to take down a video that featured a mod of Pal World that replaced all the pals with Pokemon. It also issued a statement saying it was aware of Pal World, although the statement did not refer to the game by name, and would be investigating the game to, quote, take appropriate measures to address any acts that infringe on intellectual property rights related to the Pokemon, unquote. So Tigerclaw says this might just be a scare tactic, and Mike Def says, actually, if it were that, they would have just done it in January. The time for scare tactics has passed. And if it took this long for Nintendo to find something, then they actually intend to go through with it. They're not going to do a scare tactics after all the buzz about Pal World died down. That would be more of a Streisand effect than anything, because people don't talk about Pal World anymore. We talked about Pal World a lot for a couple weeks, and then people moved on from Pal World. And, you know, then it was Helldivers 2 for a couple weeks. And then people moved on from Helldivers 2. And then it was Conquered for a few weeks. Actually, just kidding. It was never Conquered, unfortunately. Mike Def says Nintendo and TPC obviously took all their time to actually sue and to get all of that Pal World money. So we will hopefully learn which patents specifically. I don't know what patents they would use. There are allegedly patents about catching Pokemon and the act of catching a monster in a ball, which is, I don't think that Pokemon was the first one to do that one, but maybe they were. They have the patent for it anyway, so it's up to the courts to decide if they can actually enforce that patent. There are others, things that they could probably do about data storage, because one thing that we've learned is that all you got to do is patent the process of doing something, and any way somebody does that process, that is your innovation. Even if they did it in a different way that you would have, as long as everything that they did is encapsulated in your patent, that's your innovation and they stole from you. And that is how patent law works in this country right now. So we're going to take a very quick music break. There actually is no Orange Lounge Radio tonight. Two of the members of Orange Lounge Radio are in TwitchCon, which is just wrapping up. The other member is up doing something somewhere else unrelated to any convention. So they're not here tonight. It is just me. So I'm going to take a quick music break, and then we will be right back to close out the show. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show and the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
This is the voice of Marty McFly. When I am not traveling back in time with Telltale Games, I'm listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show.
That's the bumper I chose. We talked about that bumper. I remember talking about that bumper. That is not Michael J. Fox, believe it or not. That was A.J. LoCascio, who was the voice of Marty McFly in Telltale Games Back to the Future, as Marty told you. And they actually allowed him, which we got all the proper thing from Telltale, they allowed him to record a bumper as Marty McFly. And so, he, amazing voice actor. I know he's been doing some other higher-profile stuff since then. That was a while ago. That was at E3. That was, I think, E3 2014. Maybe the last time I went to E3 is when I got that bumper. So that's a 10-year-old bumper. But yeah, so that's A.J. LoCascio doing that bumper. If you want to be a bumper, do a bumper, be a bumper. If you want to do a bumper, I'd still take some. You don't have to be A.J. LoCascio. In fact, don't be A.J. LoCascio. We've got one A.J. LoCascio. That's enough for me. All you got to do is send me either an MP3 of just your voice or a video of just you and your voice, and I will choose which DMCA violation to put behind it. Saying that, you know, say who you are and say that you're coming back to the Bobby Blackwolf Show. I am going to just sit here for just a second. SJR Matt says he's Gambit. A.J. LoCascio is Gambit in X-Men 97. So like I said, higher profile stuff. So I am actually, there is no Orange Lounge Radio tonight, so I am here by myself. I'm going to check the green room real quick. There's nobody in it right now, I don't think. But if somebody wants to call in for, you know, 5 minutes, talk about one of these things, things going on in the gaming industry, I'll stay here for a little bit, and then we're going to go ahead and shut down the show and raid someone here on Twitch. But if you want to call in, go to the Green Room voice chat channel over at vognetwork.com/Discord, our Discord server, and maybe we can talk about some stuff on gaming. So I did see the trailer for the Like a Dragon Gaiden that's coming out, which I know they don't call it that here in the U.S., but it is the Gaiden. They should have called it Like a Pirate. So RGG Studio, Ryo Gotaku, the creators of the Yakuza Like a Dragon franchise, now Like a Dragon, released a trailer of their next game, which it's actually kind of amazing because they do things the way that a lot of TV shows and movies do, where they actually are very proud of the fact that they reuse assets. So the Yakuza series started back in like the mid-2000s, right, on PlayStation 2. And it's, like I said, it's kind of interesting to talk about because it's called Like a Dragon in Japan. Like, Ryuga Gotaku is actually Like a Dragon. Like, that's what it translates to. But in the U.S., the U.S., marketing arm said, call it Yakuza because crime movies are in right now. They use literally the same map for every game. They add other maps, and then when they add another map, they start using it in every game. So the city of Kamurocho is like in every game. And so you can go into a new game and you already know where things are. And it also makes it easier for them to tell their stories because they don't have to rebuild the environment. They don't have to use new sets. So they did Hawaii for Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. That was the new map. Well, how can they reuse that? Well, let's make Goro Majima a pirate. And it's called Like a Dragon Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii is the name in English. Now, in Japan, it's called Like a Dragon Gaiden Pirate in Hawaii. That's what it's called there. The Gaiden is important because the Gaiden, what that means is Gaiden translates to short story. So Like a Dragon Gaiden, the man who erased his name, when they say it's a short story, it was a 10-hour campaign. It was not the 80, 90-hour campaign that Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth was. So it's a short story. It's a shorter campaign. You're going to be able to complete it in 10 to 15 hours, and that's what this is going to be. And it's going to use the Hawaii map as well as some of the other assets that they made for Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. But now you're going to play as Goro Majima. He's going to become a pirate, and you're going to have ship naval battles, and it's an action. It's not a turn-based. It is action-based. So it's the traditional Yakuza-style beat-em-up combat. But it's really neat how what the RGG actually was like, no, we reuse our assets all the time. And that's why we can give you a new game every 2 years. Because they have very quick turnaround because they're not starting from scratch. They're using the same map for Kamurocho that they made in 2005. Like, it's literally like the pawn shop's in the same place. The bar is in the same place. The sewer entrance is literally in the same place. And it's actually, and I can't remember the name of the town in Japan. It does start with a K. It's not called Kamurocho, but it is a real town. And people go there who are fans of the Like a Dragon series, and they can navigate that city because it's there. And Ijincho, which is where what was introduced in Like a Dragon, Yakuza Like a Dragon, that's also another, like, based on a real city in Japan, and you can actually go there and navigate if you have the knowledge of the games. Questfresh says, finally, the quadruple A pirate experience we've been waiting for. Yes, I mean, Assassin's Creed Black Flag doesn't count. That's not what this is. This is going to be a lot better. And Tigerclaw says, one of the Like a Dragon games took place in feudal Japan, used the same character model. So yeah, so they've done that as well. So we're talking about Like a Dragon Ishin, which actually was a remake of the original Ishin. And it is what is, I believe it's Kabuki Theater, is the type of theater that is, where it is people playing as feudal Japan characters. And that's a real type of entertainment in Japan, and that's what it is. So, you know, you play as the main character from Ishin, but it's Kiryu, and it's even Kiryu's voice actor, and it's Kiryu's character model just dressed up like a samurai, and you've got that kind of combat. And I believe, like, even the maps look like Kamurocho and everything like that. So it's really interesting how they've reused a lot of assets to be able to put out new stuff every 2 years. Tireclaw does say there is a TV show of it recently. It actually isn't out yet, of Like a Dragon. There is. It's called Like a Dragon Yakuza. It's on Amazon Prime. It's coming out in late October. And the problem that a lot of people are going to have with it, because of one of the things director said, which I am disappointed at, is that I always describe the Like a Dragon series as a really heartfelt, touching crime family drama with really deep characters and a really great storyline, continually interrupted by an episode of The Simpsons. The Amazon Prime show gets rid of the part where it gets interrupted by The Simpsons. It is literally just the Japanese crime family drama part. It is literally just the hard, you know, the deeply serious stuff. The wacky stuff that I love, they're actually not putting in the series. That is not what they're putting in the series at all. So I am not as excited about the series as I was originally. I will wait for reviews to see if I need to, you know, check it out on Amazon Prime, because I, you know, we don't pay for the Amazon Prime without ads. So do I want to sit through ads to watch it? I don't know. That's why I'm not as excited about the TV show that's coming on Amazon Prime, because they're taking all the stuff that made the, like, Yakuza and Like a Dragon series unique and amazing and what everybody remembers out of it, and they took it away. And they're just doing the part that is, like, it's like everything else. Questbuster says, they refresh what they recycle with so much new content. It's exciting to hit up Kamurocho again just to see what changed. Because, yeah, so anyway, Like a Dragon series, it's great. You can actually get all the Yakuza games on Game Pass. They're on Game Pass right now, as well as Yakuza Like a Dragon. Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, not on there, but Ishin's on there that we were talking about, the Kabuki Theater, the man who erased his name, that little Gaiden one, that's on there. Everything except Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth is on Game Pass Ultimate. So if you have Game Pass, you have them all. And you should go play them. So nobody was in the green room, so I just sat and talked about Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii, which comes out in like February of next year. So I'll tell you how it is then. I'll play it then, because I'll definitely play it. So that is it for me. Like I said, there is no Orange Lounge Radio tonight. I apologize if you're waiting for Orange Lounge Radio. They're with Jamie and Matt in at TwitchCon in San Diego. They were not able to be here tonight. Rob is out doing something else not convention related in a different city. So they're not going to be here. So we will raid someone at the end. But that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel. So you can catch us live and interact with the show directly. I am on multiple different social media platforms, at BobbyBlackWolf.com on Blue Sky. So everywhere else at Bobby Blackwolf, or you can go on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. And once again, I will be commentating for about 10 minutes or 15 minutes on Multithon Rivals 2024 this Friday night, September 27th at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. I got to scroll up to make sure I get the name right because I keep forgetting. Doronko Wonko. There is a race between Cubs Rule 21 and Cell Cuth Mind that I will be commentating on. They're going to be trying to get all the gifts. It's Power Wash Simulator in reverse. It's what happens to get Power Wash Simulator to that point. But we could not make this show on Sunday nights work without the help of the audience who go above and beyond. Tonight was one of those nights people went above and beyond because I think it was people were resubscribing and everything. So thank you so much to the people who resubscribed tonight. Thank you so much, Mike Deft, who resubscribed for the 69th time and just said noise. Thank you, Mike Deft. Fifth Dream resubscribed with a little less than three. Tiger Claw just resubscribed. Thank you so much. S. Jonah Matz cheered 250 bits. And Sean 322 cheered 200 bits to say whoop, which I believe got us a hype train. S. Jonah Matz resubscribed, saying he is 9 months away from being nice. No, you're nice now. You're fine. You're nice now. And then Orange Wright resubscribed. Thank you so much for that. And we did get a hype train during all that. Thank you so much for the hype train and all that. And you just being here, really. Thank you so much. So I'm going to go ahead and hit the button so I won't get too sappy. Thank you so much for being here. That's really all we ask. I will see you again next week. OLR will be back next week. We're going to raid someone tonight. Come back after the credits. I'll see you. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the Vogue Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.